जय राजा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी जय गोपी जनबाल बागरी वरदारी जसनानन व्रज जनरांजन जामुन चिरावन शारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय शुभा परमहंस परिव्राजकचर्य शुतरशुत श्री श्रीमार सिवाय श्रेष्ठ भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की राजग्रंथ श्रीमा भगवतम की सामवेद भक्तवृंद की Itai Gaur Manandi. All glories to the Sum of the Votis. All glories to the Sum of the Votis. All glories to Shishu Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Buddhim tu pramadham vidyan mamaham iti yat kritam Yamadishtayad he he smin Puman punktek shabhir gunan Budhim tu pramadham vidhyan Mamaham iti yat kritam Yamadishtayad he he smin Puman punktek shabhir gunan Buddham tu pramadam vidhyan Namaham idiyat kritam Yamadishta yadhe hisman Kuman vung te kribir gunan Buddhim tu pramadhan vidhyan Maham iti yat kritam Yamadishtaya dehe smin Puman vungta shabir kunan Buddhim tu pramadhan vidhyan Maham iti yat kritam Yamadishtaya dehe smin Uman vong takshabir guna Mothers Udim tu pramadham vidyan Yamadishtaya dehe smin Shubhir Gunan Buddhim tu pramadhan vidhyan Maham iti yat kritam Yamadishtaya dehe smin Udam tu pramadam vidyan maham iti yat kritam yamadista dehismin kumam bhakti shabir gunan budhim intelligence to then pramadam the young woman Paranjani Vidyat, one should know, mama, my, aham, I, iti, thus, yat kritam, done by intelligence, yam, which intelligence, adishtaya, taking shelter of, dehe, in the body, Asmin, this, Puman, the living entity, Bhunkte, suffers and enjoys. Akshabihi, by the senses. Gunan, the modes of material nature. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. The great sage Narada continued, the word Pramadha, mentioned in this regard refers to material intelligence or ignorance. It is to be understood as such. When one takes shelter of this kind of intelligence, he identifies himself with the material body. Influenced by the material consciousness of I and mine, he begins to enjoy and suffer through his senses. Thus, the living entity is entrapped. Purport. In material existence, so-called intelligence is actually ignorance. When intelligence is cleared up, it is called buddhi yoga. In other words, when intelligence is dovetailed with the desires of Krishna, it is called buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadadmi buddhi yogam tam inamam upayanti te. Quote, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. End quote. Real intelligence means linking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When this is done, the Supreme Personality of Godhead from within gives one the real intelligence by which one can return home back to Godhead. Intelligence in the material world is described in this verse as pramadha, because in material existence, the living entity falsely claims things to be his. He thinks, I am the monarch of all I survey. This is ignorance. Actually, nothing belongs to him. Even the body and the senses do not belong to him, for they are given to him by the grace of the Lord to satisfy his different propensities through the material energy. Nothing actually belongs to the living entity, but he becomes mad after everything, claiming, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. Janasya moho yamahamimeti. This is called illusion. Nothing belongs to the living entity, but he claims that everything belongs to him. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that this false intelligence be purified. Cheto darpana marjanam. When the mirror of intelligence is polished, the real activities of the living entity begin. This means that when a person comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, his real intelligence acts. At that time, he knows that everything belongs to Krishna and nothing belongs to him. As long as one thinks that everything belongs to him, he is in material consciousness. And when he knows perfectly that everything belongs to Krishna, he is in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vanja Kaputurubhya Shakripa Sindhubere Vacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I think
Narada Muni is now describing to King Prachini Barhishat what all the various meanings of the allegory that he's just told. So we're just hearing about those details. So in this verse, Narada Muni, I think he's talking about what happens to Paranjana. Paranjana means a materialistic living entity. One who is trying to enjoy this body is called Paranjana. So anyone in this world is called Paranjana. So he's describing here what happens to Paranjana, the materialistic living entity, when he hooks up with his wife, named Paranjani, or named here Pramada, which means crazy. So what happens to the living entity when he hooks up with his wife? He becomes crazy. That is being mentioned here. And so what is being described by Srila Prabhupada in the purport is the materialistic intelligence. What happens to the living entity when he has materialistic intelligence? So in this material world, there are two types of intelligence. In short, one is called awakened intelligence and another is called sleeping intelligence. Those are the two types of intelligence in the material world, seen by conditioned souls. That is mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagarati bhutani yasyam jagarati bhutani sanisha pashutamuni. What is the time of awakening for all beings is a time of sleeping for the self-control. And the time of sleeping for the all beings is the time of awakening for the introspective sage. Anyway, paraphrasing, I probably mixed it up a little bit. So that's describing that there are two, if you read that purport, first sentence, Srila Prabhupada describes that there are two types of intelligence. This intelligence is exhibited by conditioned souls. So one conditioned soul has sleeping intelligence, and another conditioned soul has awakened intelligence. So sleeping in context of what's being discussed here, it all depends on if they're awake to or sleep to the principle of Ishavasyam that we hear about in Ishopanishad. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yak kinchit jagat yam jagat tena tyak tena bunjita. What is it? Madanam kasya swidanam? I'm speculating. Everything belongs to Krishna. He's the Ishavasya, means he's the controller and the proprietor of everything. Everything means there are two types of prakritis in this material world. One is called apara prakriti and another one is called para prakriti. If you read Prabhupada's purport, he talks like this. So apara prakriti refers to everything that is inanimate in the material world, the structures of matter. And para prakriti refers to the living entity who's trying to enjoy that inanimate matter. And Krishna is the source of both of them. So he owns everything. He's the owner of everything, including our very selves. So this is called the Ishavasana principle. Krishna owns everything. And we are allowed to use things in this world according to our quota. Generally, especially amongst conditioned souls, there's confusion about what is meant by quota. What is my quota? So someone may say having Mercedes-Benz is my quota. Okay, only having one, not two, but that's my quota. I need at least one Mercedes, otherwise I cannot be happy. But the quota mentioned in that verse means in terms of one's service, in terms of one's duty. Of course, in order to understand that, you would have to be guided by the Shastra, otherwise it would all be speculative. What is my quota? So quota means according to one's service within a Varnashram system, and ultimately according to one's service to God, one has a certain quota. And he's allowed to take that quota, and he should not take more than that, knowing well to whom it belongs. So according to one's realization of that verse, he is said to be sleeping or awake. What we're hearing about in this purport is one who's asleep to that type of vision of the Ishavasana principle. He is sleeping. So because of being asleep, sleep means it's compared to ignorance. So then this intelligence is an expansion of that ignorance. That's why Narada Muni says, You can say ignorance, or you can say materialistic intelligence. Because materialistic intelligence is an expansion of being ignorant, the ignorance. So then what is being mentioned here is a living entity, he's ignorant to the position of God, he's ignorant of his own self, and he's ignorant of the relationship. He cannot see God. Anyone seeing God in this material world? Anyone has seen? Anyone has experience of seeing the Lord? Aside from the symbolic seeing, has anyone actually seen? Someone said, I saw God's hand in that incident. I can see God's arrangements. But who has actually seen the Supreme Lord eye to eye, you know, face to face, ear to ear, like that, chest to chest? We don't see God in the material world, of course, because we don't desire to see the Lord. And neither we see ourselves. We neither see ourselves. Just like, actually, if we didn't have things like mirrors, we couldn't even see the body. Our eyes don't have the power to even see the body. If there wasn't things like reflecting surfaces like water or a mirror, we would not even see our body. And even if you could see the body, we are still not seeing ourselves. So we are ignorant of Krishna, we're ignorant of ourselves, we're ignorant of the position. As a result of the ignorance, then speculation starts to take place. Speculation can only go on when there's ignorance. If you know, just like many times we ask people who they are, and everyone will start speculating. Well, I am many things. So I know I am an artist, but I'm also a good person. I'm a cool person. And they just start speculating anything. And many times when I would pose this question to them, I said, just say you don't know. You don't know. Or sometimes I say, that is a very difficult thing to answer. And I said, because you don't know. You have to admit. If we knew who we were, then if someone asks us who we were, immediately we give answer. It is not a very difficult thing. So when there's ignorance, one has to take shelter of speculation. Speculation means the desire to come to proper knowledge by the wrong method. That is called mental speculation. It's a desire to come to the right knowledge by the wrong method, using the wrong method. And we're in ignorance, so we take shelter of speculation. So what's being described here, what is the speculation? So I don't see God, I don't see myself, but what I do see is all this paraphernalia surrounding me. That's what I do see. I see objects of the senses. So because I don't see the proprietor of those objects of the senses, and I'm also speculating about what is my position, and what I do see is this paraphernalia, so what is the speculation? This belongs to me. There is no one here, it's sitting idle. No one is touching it. Just like sometimes we may have experience of seeing some object lying around, maybe let's say lying around the temple. And after 1 week you see the same object lying in one spot. You say, I guess it doesn't belong to anyone. So then you will take it for yourself. Many times it happens like, sometimes you see one gumsha, perhaps you're in need of gumsha. You see one gumsha is there lying. For 1-2 weeks is lying there. So I guess it doesn't belong to anyone. So then you take it for yourself, isn't it? That is a natural thing, actually. Just like in my room, there's one table there. If you go and see in my room, there's one table. I should say my room, see? Ignorance. The room which I'm residing in. The table was sitting over here in the corner. For 1 month, it was sitting there. And for 1 month, I was seeing if someone would take it. I thought it was broken, actually. That's why no one was taking it. Then I saw that it wasn't broken. So I gave it 1 more week after that. And it was still sitting there idle, so then I took it. I said, I guess it doesn't belong to anyone. So I hope it doesn't belong to anyone. If it did, it's in my room. You can take it back. But then I'm just trying to describe, that's the principle. The living entity is in ignorance. He does not see God. He doesn't see the proprietor. So he takes shelter of speculation. Material intelligence means speculation. He's speculating. And he says, oh, all this paraphernalia is here. It does not belong to anyone. So then he accepts it for himself. He tries to enjoy it. That is a natural consequence. Just like if you see, suppose a young man sees a young woman. So he sees no one is giving her shelter. It looks like she is needing some shelter. No one is there to give her shelter. Someone is speculating like this. Little does he know that her husband, I always joke like this, her husband, Mr. World, you know, what is that? The He-Man competitions, huh? Mr. Universe. He is over there buying something. So he just left his wife there for some short time. So the man, he see, oh, she is without any shelter. Actually, her shelter is over there buying something. and his bicep is as big as this guy's head, you know? I always joke like this. So if she has a protector, a proprietor, what do you think? Oh, she has no shelter. I should go over and give her shelter. So he goes over and tries to, the young man, bewildered by his senses, goes over and tries to claim. He sees her as an object. He doesn't see her as a person. That usually only happens a few months later after marriage. Oh, actually living entity. So he tries to accept for his enjoyment, and then Mr. Universe, her husband, comes over, you know, 6 feet tall. He has to look up like this. And muscles, big muscle man is there. Then she has a shelter. And then he's punished. So like that, the living entity does not see that Pakriti has a shelter, namely the Supreme Lord, who is the Purusha. Actually has a shelter, but he cannot see the Purusha. So he thinks, I will give shelter. I will accept for myself. And that way he becomes a thief. And just as a thief is punished because of taking something that does not belong to him. In the same way, when a jiva tries to enjoy Krishna's property, thinking that it has no shelter and tries to take it for himself, then he is punished by the material energy. So this is the result of the sleeping intelligence and the material intelligence that Prabhupada is describing here. He is thinking, everything is mine, mine. Just like I often tell this about my cousin. When he was a young boy, I was in high school. He was young boy, maybe like 3 or 4 years old. And when he would come and visit our house, and my aunt and my mother would be talking downstairs, he would come upstairs. And our room was filled with so much of paraphernalia. So whatever we touched, he would grab and say, mine. I was like, this is weird. Okay, so then I was like, okay. I thought, okay, that's his. Let him play with that toy. So then I would leave him there, and I would go over to my chessboard. And then he would abandon that toy, and he would walk over to the chessboard, and he'd say, mine. He would, like, snatch the piece out of my hand and say, mine. I'm like, okay, let him play chess. And then I would go over to the video game. Then he would drop the chess piece, and he'd walk over to the video game. Mine. I was like, this is trained up from the very beginning by Maya. Maya's giving him the intelligence. So he came into, you know, my house, and he starts saying, everything is mine, 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 mine. He starts saying like that. And that way, he becomes more and more entangled. It's being mentioned here, Janasimo Hoya Mahamimiti. He becomes more entangled in the conception of himself as a material body, and consequently the idea that everything belongs to me. That is strengthened. Pum samstriya mituni bhavametam. What is the second line? Tayor hridaya granti ahu. It is said that the attachment begins with the attachment to the object of sex desire. Pum sastriya maituni bhavametam. And then it creates a hridaya granti, means a hard knot in the heart, the knot of false ego. And then it expands from there. Ato griha shetra sutapta vitayar. It expands from there to house, children, wealth, paraphernalia. And the more you acquire, the more the knot is tightened. Because you have more to lose. So then you feel, you gain attachment to those things. And particularly when you're dealing with inanimate objects, attachment can be strong. You have experience, isn't it? Just like, suppose you just bought a brand new computer, Macintosh computer, very expensive computer. And one of your friends comes up to you, and he's known to lose things also. And he says, can I borrow your computer? Then what will you say? You probably won't say flat out no, because usually we're good at being duplicitous nowadays. So we would give some very, yes, you can use, but after some time, because I have to set up the programs, put the software on, it's going to take me about 2 years. Because he's known to lose things. So if you bought a brand new computer, you feel very attached to that computer. It is my computer. And therefore, because he's known to lose things, you not want to give mine, because then I feel I am losing something. So that is an inanimate object, how strong the attachment will be. How strong an attachment will be to an inanimate object. But even stronger than that is attachment to animate living entities. Because the attachment is a mutual attachment. That is described in that verse of Bhagavatam, Hridaya Granti Ahu. Especially with the attachment to woman, it's a mutual attachment. children, like this, living entities. It's a mutual attachment. So with your computer, if you desire to give it up, it will not say, no, you should be with me. It is inanimate. So as soon as you decide to give it up, it is gone. But with living entities, if you try to throw away, they will not throw you away. So then you have a problem. It's a mutual attachment. So then the more it expands, the more difficult it is to get out of such situation, isn't it? Therefore, first it begins with the object of sex desire, and it expands from there. So many in-laws, children, social obligations, friends, like that, it expands. And the more it expands, the more entangling it is. Very difficult to come out because of mutual attachment. Just like with the in the situation with Sanatana Goswami, he wanted to retire. But the Nawab Hussain Shah became attached to him because he said, I'm out here plundering everyone, and because I know I can count on you to take care of the kingdom. But if you leave, then I won't be able to be free to plunder everyone. So mutual attachment is very entangling. Very entangling, very hard to get out of the that situation. So then the more one acquires, the more one says, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. Family, friendship, society, love, like that. Then practically speaking, it becomes impossible for him to come out of the material entanglement. He's not allowed to come out. Just like, it's a tangential, it's a joke, you've heard it many times. There was a, they were trying to carry some frogs from India to Britain. And then the barrel didn't have any top on it. And so the British man told the Indian, he said, you need to put one top on it, otherwise all the frogs will jump out. And the Indian said, no, no need, these are Indian frogs. If you want to pick on some other country, you can say some other country's name. This is just how I've heard it. And then, so the British man asked him, what do you mean by Indian frog? He said, Indian frog means when one frog is trying to jump out, the other frog will pull him down. So therefore, you don't have to worry about putting top on the barrel. No one will get out. All the frogs will get there to British for sure. So that is like, that. Examples gives visual to the situation of how tough it is to become Christian conscious in the material world. You try to get out, but all the attachments we've cultivated grab us and keep us, oftentimes can keep one from strongly pursuing Christian consciousness. Particularly, family, that's a pretty powerful one. Especially the mother, supported by the grandmother. It's like a hard ankle, you cannot get out. And then the friends, so many friends will be there. What are you doing? Pulling. The boss that's so nice, he just gave you a raise. So that way you want to be Krishna. I want to chant 16 rounds. I'm wanting to do that. But I can't. Why? Because my mother said it's not, I should not do. I should not become brainwashed. Therefore, because I don't want to be brainwashed. My mother, even in the Bhagavad Gita, said you should respect your parents. So I want to respect my mother. And no one can get out of the material world. Very difficult. That's how the attachments work. Therefore, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna's difficulty in killing is because it is like killing himself also. Because the attachments reinforce the false conception of self. So if I kill the family members, then I'm killing myself also. So therefore, he did not want to surrender to Krishna as a result. That is how the material intelligence is working. So it is very, very difficult to come out of the material world due to this type of intelligence. So then Srila Prabhupada speaks about awakening that intelligence, the real intelligence of the soul. So he quotes Bhagavad Gita 10:10. This type of intelligence that we've just described is described in Bhagavad Gita as Beda Atma Di. The word Di means intelligence, and Beda Atma means to separate the Atma. So the intelligence that separates the Atma from its true well-being, that's called Beda Atma Di. That intelligence which separates the Atma from its true well-being. So that is on the bad side of the sleeping intelligence. And on the awakened side, there's Buddhi Yoga, that intelligence which connects one to Krishna. So on the one hand, there's Beda Atma Di, the intelligence which separates Beda, separates the soul from Krishna, that sleeping soul, sleeping intelligence. And the other side is Buddhi Yoga, that Buddhi, that intelligence which yoga, which connects to Krishna. So then Prabhupada is describing that here, how that intelligence comes. And in Srila Prabhupada's description, that intelligence is awakened. He says, Lord Chaitanya, Mahaprabhu recommends that this false intelligence be purified, cheto darpana marjanam, So it's not that when I become spiritual, I'm devoid of intelligence. That is like the New Age people. They don't actually articulate it in that way, but essentially that's what they're saying. Just love everyone. No discrimination. Smoking marijuana, so that is also spiritual. Doing illicit sex, that is also spiritual. You should not criticize anyone. You should love anyone. So I always joke with people when I'm criticizing New Age. I said, that means they're basically telling us to abandon our intelligence. So after you become spiritual, you become more dull. Already I'm dull due to the influence of the age of Kali. And when I become interested in New Age, I become extra dull, super dull. And more difficult to preach to such people, actually. Because they think they know. They think they're very spiritual. Just like Mahaprabhu, the reason he went to South India to preach and didn't stay in Navadvip, because the Pashanis in Navadvip were like impossible to preach to, Prabhupada says in the purport. Mahaprabhu wanted to find a favorable place to preach. Because he said, all these Pashanis in Navadvip, they're so puffed up, thinking, I already know, I'm so spiritual. So Mahaprabhu said, I cannot preach to them. So he went to South India to tour, to preach to the South Indians. I guess at that time they were more simple. I don't know about now. But at that time, I guess they were more simple. Mahaprabhu can preach to them, so he traveled that way. So similarly, it's very difficult to preach to persons who already feel they are quite spiritual. I'm already real. Even though I'm smoking marijuana, I'm having sex. That is spiritual love. They say like that. So very difficult to preach to such persons. So we're not to abandon intelligence in spiritual life, but the intelligence is meant to be purified. So Prabhupada is saying that here. Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, the intelligence should become purified. So that purification of intelligence is possible by the association of sadhus, devotees of the Lord. So there are verses like that. So many verses are like that, but Kama Dina Katina Katida Palita Duranideshas Tesham Jatta Mayina Karuna Natrapa No Pushanti Ushira gaita nata yadupate sampatam lapta buddhis. Did you know last night? Desham ayata sharanam abhayam mam ninyukshak madasya. That one is like tongue twister for me. Ninyukshak. Anyway, I'm a Westerner, so it doesn't really make any difference. Kamandi na katina katida balita durni desha. So the devotee is praying. There is no end to the unwanted orders of my lusty desires. Kamandi na. Kamadina means lust. Durnideshas means unwanted. Palita means I've obeyed. There is no end to the unwanted orders of my lusty desires. We have experience like that. You satisfy this lusty desire, and then another one comes, and another one, and another one. There is no end to it. There is no end. Then he says, Tesham jata mai na karuna. He says, even though I have served my desires, Natrapa no pashanti. I have not felt ashamed to do so. I have not hesitated to do so also. But still, even though I've done like that, I'm a very good servant, first class servant. I've served my lesser desires very first class. I didn't feel ashamed to do so. Even they asked me to do most abominable thing, I very submissively obeyed, like a menial servant. Huh? Tesham jata mayi nakuruna. Even though I'm such a good servant, they have not shown me any mercy. They have not shown me any mercy. He prays like that. Ushe gaitanata yodupate sampatam lobdu buddhis. He says, but today I am giving up such unwanted masters. Ushe gaita, I'm giving them up. How are you able to give them up? Because lobdu buddhi, my intelligence has been awakened by the association of devotees. The verse doesn't actually say that, but the context in which this verse appears in Sanatan Shiksha, Mahaprabhu's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. Mahaprabhu was describing two types of jivas, those who are liberated and those who are conditioned. And describing the conditioned soul, he describes how he enters in the material world to pursue his lust desires. And then he becomes a servant of lust and anger. Brahmite, brahmite, yadu sadhu, brahmite, brahmite, yadi, sadhu, vaidyapai. And in this way, Brahmite, Brahmite, he's traveling all throughout the universe. And if he's fortunate, Sadhu Vaidya Pai, he meets a Sadhu Vaidya. Sadhu Vaidya means a spiritual doctor, a devotee of the Lord. And then this verse is quoted, Kama Dina Katina. So that means my intelligence has been awakened by the association of Sadhu Vaidya Pai, by a spiritual physician. By the association of devotees, my intelligence has become purified, has become awakened. And therefore, tesham ayata sharanam abhayam mam. Therefore, my dear Lord, I am now surrendering unto your fearless lotus feet. Please engage me in your loving service. So by the association of devotees, this verse from Bhagavad Gita 10:10 is possible. Prabhupada is quoting Bhagavad Gita, tesham satata yukta nam bachatam piti purvakam. So Krishna says, I give this intelligence, the intelligence by which one can come to Krishna. Krishna says, that is a gift given to you by me. But when does he decide to give that gift? Rather, you can say he reveals that intelligence. Because it's mentioning, Prabhupada's mentioning, the intelligence is there, it needs to be purified. So you can say rather Krishna reveals such enlightened intelligence. He awakens the soul from within. But which type of soul does he awaken? So Krishna qualifies it by saying, tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam piti purvakam. There are two requirements there. Tesham means a category of persons, unto those. So not to everyone. It's not that Krishna, to everyone he's doing. Tesham means unto those. So unto who? A category of persons. So two qualifiers are there. First qualifier is satata yuktanam. You should be constantly engaged in his service. Satatan yuktanam. Constantly engaged in his service. And the second qualifier is priti bhajatam. And you should be lovingly engaged in his worship. Then if those two criteria are met, then unto those persons I will give this intelligence. So who can do that? Sometimes devotees who are not satatan yuktanam, nor are they bhajatam priti, they're saying, I cannot understand, is this super soul? Or is it mine? Is it super soul or mine? Many times this question comes up from us, the conditioned souls. We get confused many times. Was that super soul? Or was it the mind? We never just think like, and Lord Chaitanya, he's saying, it's obvious. Lord Chaitanya, was that you? Or was that my foolish mind? Kishore, Kishore, was that you? Or was it... Actually, it's obvious. Kishore, Kishore, that's why they're smiling. And when we ask that question, they smile more. And we take that as a confirmation that it's Krishna. But it's actually Krishna laughing at us. Many times we think like that. I was thinking that way, and then I noticed that Kishore's smile got bigger. That's because he's laughing. Not because he is confirming. He's not giving confirmation. He's laughing. This guy is not satatan yuktanam, nor is he bhajatam priti. And he's wondering if it's his mind. So then the Lord's smile becomes big. Sometimes his teeth might show also. Because he'll be having such good laugh that his stomach will be hurting, the teeth might actually show also. It is an obvious thing. If we're not satatam yuktanam, nor are we bhajatam priti purvakam, there's no question of Krishna's the one giving the guidance direct. There's no question. So, what does it mean? How is this possible then? We want that intelligence by which we can come to Krishna. So how is that possible? Satatan yuktanam, bhajatam priti bhuvra. How is that possible? That's possible only in the association of devotees. That's why he says, ushir gaitan ata yadupate sampratam labdha buddhis. That's only possible in the association of devotees. Devotees are, because what is a devotee? Devotee is one who is always engaged in Krishna kirtan. Satatam kirtanyanto mam. Krishna says, this means a devotee, he is always engaged in service to Krishna. So we're not able to always be engaged in service to Krishna, oftentimes due to our conditioned situation. But if you're in the association of those who are always engaged in service to Krishna, then automatically you will also be satatam yuktanam. Just like when we're living in the association of devotees, like we're living now, and nice association, automatically everything happens, practically speaking. No difficulty at all. I mean, minimum difficulty. Means that you wake up, you say, should I sleep or should I not sleep? And then you rise. There's no question of sleeping because you're in the association of devotees. I'm in a general sense. I'm speaking in a general sense. It's very easy. Like Narada Muni describes, the flow of my devotional service went by the association of the Bhakti Vedantas. And Srila Prabhupada described, devotional service flows by the association of pure devotees. So just when the river is flowing, our business is just to be in the river. You don't have to do anything, practically speaking. Except don't get sidebar on the shore. That tendency is there. You see, something is on the shoreline, then you want to get off and get out of the flow. But if you can stay in the flow, then certainly you will reach the sea. Devotional service flows by the association of pure devotees. So Satatan Yuktanam is the first thing that is required, and that is only possible in the association who are Satatam Kirtanyantamam. They're always engaged in service to Krishna, headed by glorifying Krishna. Then we also automatically be engaged in service to Krishna, Satatam. And Bhajatam Priti means the worship that we perform should have a certain type of purity to it. It's mentioned Priti. Priti means with love or affection. That should be the purity of the worship. Many people are worshiping Krishna. Even the Hindus, they may come to the temple and offer something. That is also like a type of worship. But our worship will be filled with so much aparadam, so much offense, and other types of anarthas, which makes the worship not pure. So how can the worship be pure? So Narottam Das Thakur, he also prays. He says, Marjana hai bhajana stalu sangha anukshana ajnana avidya parajaya. It's a short, like after the Guru Puja prayer, then there's one short verse by Narottam Das Thakur glorifying Vaishnavas. And in this verse he says this, Marjana hai bhajana sadhu sangha anukshana. Sadhu sangha anukshana means one who constantly keeps himself in the association of sadhus, devotees of the Lord. Then marjana, just like cheto, darpana, marjana. So marjana hai bhajana, then his bhajan will be pure. If he keeps himself in the association of sadhus, anukshana means constantly keeps himself in such association. Marjana hai bhajana, then his bhajan will be pure, cleansed. Cleansed, the word marjana means cleansed. Chaita Dharma marjana means cleansing. His bhajan will be cleansed of all such contamination. The more he keeps himself in that sangha, the more his bhajan, his worship of Krishna, will become cleansed. Ajnana avidya parajaya. Parajaya means defeat. Then he will be able to defeat the darkness of ignorance or the material intelligence. So only one who shall take serious the association of devotees, is there any hope? Otherwise, what is the 10th offense to the holy name of Krishna? Maintaining material attachment. Yeah, not having complete faith. And what is that material attachment? To I and mine. Actually, I don't have the book, but if you see the Sanskrit, sometimes it's good to look at the Sanskrit of these things, because you might catch some nuances there. So if you look at the Sanskrit from the Padma Purana, that's there in Prabhupada's shloka, but you can see it. The attachment is to I and mine. So that means one who cannot give up the attachment to I and mine cannot chant purely. He cannot chant purely. If he cannot give up attachment to I and mine, he cannot chant purely the holy name of Krishna. So that means we must give up attachment to I and mine. It's imperative. Otherwise, our chanting will be filled with so much offense. It's the 10th offense to the holy name. When I first found that Sanskrit, I was like, felt tired. Because at first, like, okay, as a brahmachari, see, another material conception. As a brahmachari, I was thinking, oh, I was giving up so many things I've given up. So I'm able to easily chant pure holy name of Krishna. And then when I, some years later, when I saw this Sanskrit, I said, square one, Nam Aparad. You cannot chant pure holy name of Krishna unless one is freed from the conception of I am I. That's what it says in the Padma Purana verse that we say. So therefore, we must give up conception of I am I. So that is made possible when there is an awakened intelligence. That is, awakened intelligence is possible by association of devotees constantly. And that association, many things can be said. I cannot, no, it's no time, I don't want to bore you. And I did this in the Philadelphia to one young man. He came to hang out with one devotee, and he lost his whole afternoon because when he came, I took out the Bhagavatam, all various sets of Bhagavatam, and I started talking about Sadhu Sangha from all these different cantos. And that way, two, three hours went, and he finally told me, I've had enough. And I said, what is this? What type, the devotee means? If your dharma sunisita pumsam, if it's not awakening attraction to hearing chani, then whatever you're doing is so much useless labor. And then another hour I went on speaking. And then after that I may watch one video. So that way 6 hours went. The whole afternoon went like that in discussing sadhu sangha. And then after the end I apologized to him several times. I even called him the next day and said, I'm really sorry. He said he was appreciative, but you can never tell these days. The devotee's not always so straightforward. So I did apologize for that. But it was, I thought it was so nice. Topic was there, sadhu sangha. And so much is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam glorifying the association of sadhus. And practically speaking, Lord Chaitanya's principles are that only. Nam Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva, that means sadhu sangha. Sangha means seva, otherwise no sangha at all. And Jiva Daya, compassion to the jivas. So that is probably, if those three things are captured, you've captured the whole essence of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. So therefore you'll see so much glorification in our Sampradaya, especially is there of Sadhu Sangha. Anyway, so Kapila Dev mentions in the third canto, Prasangam Antaram Pasham Atmanam Kavayo Vidu Sadeva Sadhu Shukrito Moksha Dharma Pavitam, that everyone knows, not everyone, excuse me, Kavayo Vidu, those persons who are learned. Those persons are learned, they can understand this, that attachment to the material is the greatest cause of entanglement for the jiva. Prasangam ajaram means strong attachment for matter is the greatest entanglement for the soul, atmanam, for the soul. But that same strong attachment, sadeva, krito, that same strong attachment when applied to sadhus opens the doors of liberation. So then Kapila Dev goes on to explain to his mother that you should seek out such association. So that verse is 20, then like three verses later, he says to his mother, you should seek out such association. Why? Because by that association, by getting attached to sadhus, that will counteract the pernicious effects of the material attachment. If you get attached to the sadhus, he explains, that will counteract the pernicious effects of the material attachment, which means marjana hari bhajana, that means you can chant Hare Krishna with purity, with faith, real faith. So when we keep ourselves in the association of devotees, our intelligence remains operational because it's getting cleansed. But as soon as we shall leave such sangha of devotees due to our mental speculation problem, we have mental speculation problems, so we find fault with the devotees. Oh, this is not at all good association, not at all good association. And then we go out and live out in no man's land by oneself. No one will ever see you again, and maybe for the festivals. Then you'll be ruined. Someone is thinking like that, that I will leave the association of devotees because I cannot see any good qualities in any of the devotees. So many faults. So then they move away from the association of devotees, you know, out in no one's, very far away. No one will, they will be without hardly any sangha. They will say to themselves, oh yes, I will keep some sangha. I will be able to figure out some way to associate, but they won't have no way to associate. They stay far away from the association of devotees. Then the intelligence becomes more and more contaminated. And the nature, Bhaktisiddhanta talks about this in his process of initiation paper, which Srila Prabhupada Maharaj usually always speaks from. He always just makes one statement from that paper every time. I know because I read that essay, so when Maharaj mentions that, I say, I know where that's from. Bhaktisiddhanta points out that the nature of the material disease is that it does not allow recognition of itself in that essay. He said the nature of the material disease is that it does not allow recognition of itself. So that means we will leave the association of sadhus because we cannot find any good qualities in association. We live far away thinking, I'll keep some association, somehow or other I'll manage. And then we'll be getting more and more contaminated and we'll not be able to recognize it also because that's the nature of the disease. So if persons are intelligently heard these messages of Srimad Bhagavatam, then they will very carefully, somehow or other, tolerate their speculation problem that is mentioned by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Tam Tatikshu Sabharata, Matra Sparshas Tukontaya, Shutoshan Sukaduka, that tolerating the perception of happiness and distress means tolerating the mind's speculations. Because since perception refers to the way the mind is perceiving things, So he who can tolerate his speculation problem and keep himself in the association of sadhus, of devotees of the Lord, then their intelligence will continue to be cleansed and they'll come back to Godhead sooner or later. But if we shall leave such sangha, because I cannot see how this is auspicious, you know, I can't do what I want, therefore it is inauspicious. Then we may get irritated. That will happen. It is bound to happen. We are conditioned souls. What to do? But we have to tolerate. Even if we don't like it, we have to anyway tolerate if we know what is good for us. We tolerate our mind becoming agitated, speculating, and keep ourselves in the sangha heartily, without committing offenses. Not keep myself in the sangha and make all types of offenses, but keep myself in the sangha with respect. Then the intelligence will continue to get cleansed, our worship will be cleansed, then we'll meet those two criteria, Satyatam Yuktanam and Bhajatam Priti, and then Krishna will allow us to gain inspiration from within our heart how to come to Him. Hare Krishna. That was my discussion. So are there any questions? Okay.
It's formulated. I'm going to speak as I'm thinking about it. So when we chant the holy name,
louder. Maybe someone can turn the fan off. Also,
I can speak louder.
Okay. Yeah, speak louder also, but the fan is, it was bothering me the whole time, but I didn't want to say anything. I was just like, I was thinking maybe the mothers were feeling that or something, so I was like, turn it off. And then the mothers would get upset at me. But it's so loud, right? You cannot hear anything properly. Okay.
So when we are chanting the holy name, it's like watering, you know, the plants as well as the weeds. So we have to be careful that the desires we hold in our heart, that those weeds are, I guess, you know, cut out, or, you know, whatever the terminology is. So similarly, when we are in the association of devotees and we are cultivating certain relationships, we have baggage of past relationships, and it's more than likely that we are reflecting those in our current relationships. So we get into a relationship with those past desires unfulfilled. So my question is, when we are cultivating those relationships, is it like chanting where the bad desires, or the material attachments in those relationships are also growing? That's one. So there's different facets to it. The second one is, does the strength of the association, or the purity of a superior person in that relationship, is that able to, over time clear out those material desires? And then the third facet is, assuming that it's required from, you know, activity from our side, so effort from our side is required to overcome those material attachments, then how should one overcome those?
So on your first point, as you just explained it, I think we could conclude easily, yes, that we do, like with the chanting, we do bring our unfulfilled desires into our new relationships and desire to fulfill them with that new relationship, and we will take that as a criteria by which we judge the health of such a relationship also. So that is certainly a problem. With that type of situation, as far as my realization would allow me to speak, I would venture to offer, I would offer the point that we might have to reevaluate our unfulfilled desire in relationships. I personally feel that oftentimes we lack a scriptural reference point for our relationships because we think it will be dry. If I try to relate according to the way Shastras tell, then it will be without life. And as a result, we end up speculating about what a relationship should be, a devotee relationship should be, particularly the relationship with the spiritual master, for example. Someone who didn't grow up with their father may want to impose that type of conception on their spiritual master. So if their spiritual master doesn't treat them like daughter or son, then they feel, my spiritual master does not care for me at all. You know, they write a very elaborate problem to their spiritual master, and their spiritual master gives a spiritual solution. He says, chant Hare Krishna, and do Vaishnava Seva, and he does not care about me. Therefore, he's given such thing. That is, if the spiritual master wants to get into the details of our various situations, that is like an extra mercy. But that's not necessarily the duty of the spiritual master. Just like if you have a math teacher, the math teacher's duty is to teach you math. And if you go to the math teacher with so many other things, and they want to deal with that, that is extra something. But their duty is to teach math, so they give math instructions. And if you think, if they don't deal with my all so many other things, then they don't care for me, but then we're misunderstanding the position, we're misunderstanding what the relationship is. So it's a little bit different with the spiritual master. That's not an exact, perfect parallel. I've heard this. But the idea is that oftentimes there should be a proper conception of what a relationship should be. And oftentimes we're just working with our material idea and bringing that into the spiritual realm, our spiritual practice. And therefore we find ourselves oftentimes dissatisfied. So it might be good, healthy thing to evaluate on the basis of Shastra, what is a spiritual relationship, and try to understand it in a more substantial sort of way, where it's not like, or next to devotion says, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do that, and it's completely dry, where it's full of happiness, full of rasa, at the same time, proper spiritual relationship it's clear. So for that dilemma, I personally feel that will help us out a lot to gain proper spiritual conception of what a spiritual relationship is, so that we might have the hope of relinquishing such unnecessary desires for things in the relationship. I don't know if I'm making sense. Anyway, that's the first point. You want to comment on that point?
When somebody is, it's more like a blind spot. So somebody may be so well versed with Shastra, may know it inside out, but it takes a deep level of honesty for somebody to be able to identify that they're carrying that baggage in a relationship.
Yeah.
So
that brings us to your second point.
How are you even going to?
That's your second point then. That connects to your second point then. That. That's a very nice point. Most of the time, we're dealing with blind spots only. We don't know. When I was in Gitanagari, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj made a point that scared me like anything. He said, described me, same analogy from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was talking about the weeds. And he said, when we do chanting, hearing, chanting, the reeds are also watering. And he said, sometimes we grab hold to a weed, thinking it to be the Bhakti Lakta, and we will protect that weed with our life and soul. And I was like, and then I joked in my head, later on I had a joke in my head, the Shastric basis for maintaining weeds. We have the Shastric basis for maintaining our weeds, you know? So we didn't get a chance to inquire later on, but that scared me a lot when I heard that particular statement in the class. I was very much like, a very difficult situation. Therefore, in the Shastras, it is always said that we should take superior association also. So that's your second point. That's the position, the purity of the person. Yeah, purity is like fire. Purity is often compared to fire. And fire gives illumination. So when we're to the degree of purity of the individuals with whom we establish a relationship with on a superior level, then that relationship particularly is supposed to give illumination to those things, those types of dilemmas. That you're holding on to a weed thinking it's the bhakti creeper, or you're having the wrong conception of what a relationship is. They can see much clearly they're in a superior position, they're pure. Then they will see how we are trying to relate, and then they can correct us. So that is always mentioned as a requirement in the Shastras. It can never be underestimated, such types of Sangha. Through hearing from them, when we get the illumination, oh, I was having a mistaken idea of relationship. That does not mean I will only associate with pure person. That sometimes people get that misunderstanding also. Shastra is always given three types of relationships. And the Bhagavatam is mentioned in so many places, three types of relationships. But the one with the superior is meant, the purity, as you mentioned, is meant to give the illumination for those types of problems we're having with the weeds and so on. That's my understanding. And the relationships with equals is meant to give reinforcement. It meant to help nourish the faith that is being engendered by the superior association. And relationship with juniors is meant to help give us an opportunity to fully express our gratitude for such association by sharing it with others. That's my understanding of. So in order for Christian conscious, healthy Christian conscious development, this prescription is given, as mentioned by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj, as mentioned by Kapila Dev also, as mentioned by one of the Navayogindras to Nimi, as mentioned in many places, same, probably the same verse. So then after we gain illumination from superior Sangha, then your third point is the work we have to do now, the work we have to do of relinquishing such obstacles to our... Relinquishing means not like we're doing it by our effort alone, but by the power of the instruction and applying it, and then it works its magic. I asked a question the other day to His Grace Nityananda Prabhu. I found the answer really nice. I was same type of question you just asked. I said the nature of material conception is very subtle, that you cannot recognize a material conception. And then Nanda Prabhu told, he said, but spiritual instruction is more subtle than that. And I thought that was really cool. So because it's subtle, we may not always appreciate how spiritual instruction is dismantling our material conceptions. We think it's not doing anything at all. Just like when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're hearing Bhagavatam, we may not immediately perceive that any effect is coming. But spiritual instruction is more subtle than even material conception. So we're not able to perceive how it is dismantling our material conception. Just like Sri Gauranga Prabhu asked me, he said, Prabhu, when I don't go to the workplace, I see immediate consequence. Boss will call me, I'll get fired. I immediate consequence. But if I don't chant, if I don't hear, I don't see any consequences there. So we were joking. He was asking that question, and we were having, this is like a month ago, so we were taking prasadam together downstairs. So I asked him, see the plant? If you stop watering the plant for one day, do you see anything has happened to it? Nothing has happened to the plant? It doesn't look like anything has happened. So 2 days you go, 3 days you go, 4 days you go, and some 2 weeks you see, nothing has happened to the plant. I don't need to water it at all. And then after 1 month, it just dies. One day you wake up, the whole plant is dead. So I said, in the same way, we think without chanting, without hearing, nothing is happening to me. I'm perfectly fine. And then suddenly, 20 years later, coming back to Srila Prabhupada, so to speak, he came out of the movement like that. So I was appreciated. So our business as practicing devotees is to gain superior association, seek out superior association to gain illumination, reinforce our faith in that type of Sangha and Christian consciousness with equals. That's usually, it's done with superiors also, but especially with equals we spend a lot of time with, and sharing that with others. And that way we can come to see what is our situation. We can apply those very subtle spiritual instructions. Then all hope is there. All hope is there. We just have to remain on the path. I read a verse in CC. It was mentioned, Sadhu Sangha Krishna Kripa Bhakti Panta something. That by the influence of, by association of sadhus, by Krishna's mercy, and by the influence of bhakti, one can give up material association. By these three things. So that's shall be my answer. I mean, I have this. Okay, we can. One we can do.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
My question has like two sections to it. Is it? My question has two sections.
These multi-level questions. I have to really like concentrate.
The first question, the first part of the question relates to relationships with superiors. In line with what Mataji was saying, I think we have a very misconstrued idea of what is affection. And so I was wondering if you could define how in a superior...
You are playing in the street and the mother yells at you, you nonsense, get out of the street. Right. You don't have any love for me.
That's
Finish.
That's right.
You get hit by a car. You're playing with fire. Mother yells at you because it's a very dangerous situation now. So you not tell nicely, otherwise you would not think it is a very serious thing. Oh, my dear Himanshu Prabhu, stop playing with the fire. You would not think it is an urgent situation. So she screams, you nonsense, put down the fire immediately. You don't have any love for me, and then you burn yourself. So it is mentioned that santare vasa chindanti manovya sanguktibihi, that the association of sadhus, santo evasya chindanti uktibihi, their words cut, chindanti means to cut, their words cut the mind's dangerous attachments. Mano vyasangam means the mind's dangerous attachments. Particularly our attachment to self-deceiving things. So, of course, that is not like the exclusive feature of a devotee's affection. There is multifaceted, sometimes soft like a rose and hard like a thunderbolt. So you see in Mahaprabhu's Leela, he was very soft and so what we would know as loving to his disciples, you know, very sweet language and feeding them and so many things. And then with Chota Haridas, he was very strong. And not just with Chota, but others also. But he was very strong. Sometimes soft like a rose, sometimes hard like a thunderbolt. It is all affection. We have to hear the Shastras to get the full gamut of the affection shown by devotees. If we only paint a picture of Srila Prabhupada, for example, if we only paint a picture of Srila Prabhupada as that very nice elderly sadhu who came and just fed the people, and he just really loved them and like that, that should be our image of sadhu. That's also, it's an understanding, it's not a complete understanding. You should also tell all those chastising pastimes also, so they get a complete, they get a better idea of Srila Prabhupada's affection. That way, if we only hear the one side, then we would think Srila Prabhupada was so merciful, but you are not at all merciful. Therefore, that's for the third point is mentioned. You should also reach out to other jivas. Then you understand. If we are only the receiving mercy, of course, don't prematurely go reach out and try to reach out for all the jivas. But we should understand that the purpose of that relationship of reaching out to others is so we can see how hard it is. And you will understand then why you have to give chastisement and all these things. You can see. Just like when you see parents chastising their children, sometimes you may think, oh, that is not the proper way to take care of a kid. That's because you don't have a kid, you can say that. But when you have a kid, you see the type of rascal dumb they're doing, especially this Kali Yuga, the psychology just comes somewhat messed up, then you will understand immediately, oh, if I was a father, I'd blast that kid so heavy like that. You will see the full gamut of the parent's affection. So if we have to hear full gamut, full spectrum of devotees' affection. And that way, when we'll be experiencing that spectrum, we will not get bewildered. Otherwise, we're thinking, sadhu is so sweet, so nice words. He feeds you, takes care of you. He speaks like so humbly, like there's always seen going like this. Prabhu, I'm your servant. That is a sadhu. And then if you were to see someone like Bhakti Siddhanta, or Srila Prabhupada, or Gaurakishore, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, very heavy. Or even in our recent time, Gaur Govinda Maharaj. I saw in the video, he took a stick and hit his disciple in the head also. The disciple was sleeping, he said, you sleeping in my class? Then he looked over at his disciple, give me the stick, you know. Disciple gave the stick, and he was sitting back, he had to come forward. He came forward, and Maharaj hit him, and then went on chastising him for like 5-10 minutes. Why are you not sleeping? Are you not sleeping tonight? He would chastise him for like 5-7 minutes. Then later on in the class, again he gave stick. This time he wasn't sleeping, he just gave him the stick. It was very funny. He said, well, now why is he giving? He didn't do anything. And then many of these disciples that you would see here, that he many times chastised, they didn't leave his lotus feet though. They didn't leave. I mean, year after year, you're seeing he's chastising the same persons in the videos, year after year, the same Acharya Van, same Premji, year after year, you're hearing. That means they could understand the full spectrum of his compassion.
So I was wondering on that point, how does one develop that intelligence to be able to see the full spectrum of sadhu's behavior? Because if we think that this is... Because then suppose... you see a very superior devotee and you're thinking, oh, this person is my spiritual master, because you have this bad idea of affection and he's so sweet to me, he's so nice to me, you know, I should surrender my life to him. But then he'll begin the real work. So anyways, the simple question is, how does one develop that intelligence to be able to see the full spectrum?
Anyway, just like if you have to teach a kid, it's not like immediately he's going to get it. It takes time. As simple as that. So gaining proper intelligence and then keeping oneself always in association of sadhus, sadhu sangha anukshana, and continuing to cleanse our worship of Krishna, our chanting, our hearing, all of it has to be cleansed in the association of sadhus. Then it says, agyana avidya parajaya. Then you'll be able to defeat ignorance that is contaminating the intelligence, the consciousness. So it's not like immediately we're going to get it. Many times we get the sauce we do not understand, but at least if we can theoretically understand and at least, and offer respect. Many of us, like I go cool another contest, many of us, when we first joined in the beginning, the type of way they train was a different way of training maybe than now. And they would be really, really heavy. Maybe in certain instances, unnecessarily heavy also. And you couldn't say anything also. That was a very dangerous thing to do. If you talk back, finish. that means another hour and a half is gone. So if you only want it to be an hour, keep quiet. If you want it to be 2.5 hours, say something. So then you kept quiet and you offer respect. That although the false ego is flaring up and you want to retaliate, but they're superior, they're senior, and I have to offer respect. You know, later on, if necessary, you can express your doubts, all these things, with appropriate language. That means, appropriate language means allow yourself to cool off, and later on maybe write it down first, and then go and speak to that devotee. Like that, you may have whatever method you have to take shelter of to keep respect in place, and then carry on. It's not like immediately we're going to get spiritual intelligence by hearing the class. Oh, that class was so inspiring, Prabhuji. And right after the class, you'll do exactly opposite of the message. Exactly opposite. So it's not such an easy thing to do. It takes a long time to teach children. So we're all babes in spiritual life. So how long is it going to take? We're babes, it's easier because they didn't know anything, and whatever they're fed, they get. But thus, we're babes and we're fed so much things. So now we have to be unfed so many things and then refed the right thing. So it may take some time. But if we're sincere and serious and without ulterior motives, then it is possible. That's what you want to add something. Yeah.
You said that a sadhu, the purpose of a sadhu is chindanti, cuts the attachment. In this verse for today, the second line begins with the word mamaham.
Mm.
The word mamaham means, I think my attachment or the things that belong to me as myself. Mm-hmm. Mama aham. So when we use the word identify with, the identification is that my things are me. That's why when the car gets hurt, I feel hurt. When my jacket tears, I feel hurt. So when the sadhu is cutting the attachment, I feel I'm being cut. That's the problem. The sadhu doesn't cut us. But we feel cut because I feel I am my attachment.
That's beautiful.
And that's where the hurt feelings are. Why did you speak like that? Why did you say like that? No, I'm cutting your attachment. No, you're cutting me. No, I love you. That's why I'm cutting the attachment. No, you're cutting me.
That's beautiful. Mamaham
identification is painful.
Thank you. That was a very necessary contribution. All right, Jitendra Prabhu wants to say something. Then we can conclude.
Sometimes I guess we have to be very subtle in our dealings with devotees as far as breaking their attachments. I am. Oh, sorry. Hare Krishna.
This thing is a little different than the other one, right?
It doesn't have the same power.
Pardon me?
Hare Krishna. I was thinking, now I'm a little confused, but anyways...
You're saying we have to be a little subtle.
Yeah. I remember reading Srila Prabhupada, he would deal with people according to he knew where they were at, so he pushed all the right buttons. He would treat some devotees very harshly, but, you know, he had the affection for them, but other devotees he would treat very gently. And I remember there was one time where a man came to Srila Prabhupada with all the devotees were around, and he wanted Srila Prabhupada to sing him a song. And so Srila Prabhupada sang him the song, and then he just left. And then, you know, he was appreciative, but the devotees were thinking, well, you know, why didn't you preach to him, you know? And Prabhupada says, I knew he was a very simple man, so I just, you know, sang him a song, and he went on his way. Another thing is, I was just looking in here. I just kind of was jumping around here in the Bhavatam, but I thought it was kind of pertinent. Just came up a few verses later. in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, oh, here it is. The system of control is called Yama, and this means subduing the senses. So could we say that Yamaraj will control our senses if we don't control them? Is that my understanding? I mean, if you're not going to control your senses, you're going to get punished by Yamaraj.
Definitely. But it doesn't mean he takes control of your senses.
Could that be the same? Could that be a correlation to this sentence here?
I don't think so. I can't see it, but I don't think so. It's not that Yamaraj will take control of our senses.
It says, when the mind is engaged in meditation on the Lord, the senses are controlled. This system of control is called Yama, and this means subduing the senses. One who can subdue the senses is called a Goswami, but one who cannot is called a Godas. But could we say that that would be the definition of Yamaraj? If you don't control your senses, Yamaraj is going to control them for you?
No, but Yamaraj is going to punish you.
Okay.
As a result of not controlling your senses, you can go to hell.
Okay.
He'll select for you.
Yeah, and then another thing is you were talking about Romapada Swami reflecting on the intelligent that doesn't know the self. So I've heard it in a simpler term. When you're in the mode of ignorance, you don't know you're in the mode of ignorance. So, Hare Krishna.
On your first point, I would like to just mention, if you, we have to be careful in the type of conception that forms when we hear about Prabhupada dealt with people according to where they're at. The reason being is that we'll think when a devotee will be showing us a flavor that might be a little bit what we consider to be harsh, we'll think that devotee, oh, you don't know how to deal with me like Srila Prabhupada. You're not expert. You should be more, you know, you should know how to deal with me. And then we'll be saying that for 25 years and not making any advancement. So it is not that in our, when we hear those types of statements, we have to be careful that the Siddhanta isn't wrong that we draw from hearing those examples. Oh, devotees, they knew how to deal with people according to, I'm sure Prabhupada dealt with persons in a way, at that moment they felt that Prabhupada didn't know how to deal with them. I'm sure there was many incidences like that because we're always speculating about the spiritual master. So we have to be careful of the type of siddhanta we draw from those types of examples. I see some devotees were writing that down, very nice. And then when a devotee will come chastising or something, they'll say, see, Srila Prabhupada knew how to deal with people, but you don't know how to deal with people. Therefore, I'm not listening to you also. Because you don't know how to deal. That means the siddhanta is wrong. We're getting the wrong conclusion from that example. That's just, I just wanted to say that also. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.